Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on the first week of summer, but of course, in Tucson, Arizona, that means virtually nothing. I mean, summer here begins a lot earlier than the third week in June. Ray Allen is on the other side of the glass. We keep him over. No, we don't keep him over there. Our purpose, just for sound purposes. Ray is producing and engineering our show. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday, the 22nd of June, 2016, coming to you from AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. We're live streaming the show for anywhere in the world listening at KVOI.com and also my website, BuckmasterShow.com. We've got all of our programs podcast available. The whole archive is there for you 24/7 on my website, BuckmasterShow.com. The first half hour today, we're going to be talking about the weather. It's very appropriate to be talking after the weekend that we all experienced, unless you were lucky enough, like some people I know, to have been over on Coronado Island or San Diego or somewhere, or out of town enjoying a vacation away from the heat. 790-2040, any weather-related questions? Dr. Zach Guido is with us. Zach will be happy to answer your weather-related questions. Zach is a good friend of our program. We've been talking to him for years. He's a climate scientist. Officially, he's known as a research scientist. I call him a climate scientist at the University of Arizona-based Institute of the Environment. He is a UA program manager for the International Research and Application Program. Zach, what is that? What's the application? Good to see you, by the way.
Thanks, Bill, for having me. It's always great to talk about weather.
Yeah, I love talking weather. What's this application program? This is something new to your title, along with the PhD after your name, which is
wonderful. Well, we affectionately know it by its acronym, IRAP. It is a project that's about helping regions and stakeholders become more climate resilient. Mm. So what that means for us is we're looking for opportunities to develop knowledge or tools so that people can better deal with both natural fluctuations in the climate and climate changes. And we do it internationally. So
Has something to do with your trip to Jamaica?
I've been working. Yes, it does. I'm very fortunate to work in the Caribbean.
Yes.
Yeah. So we currently are working with a couple groups, one in Jamaica with the coffee farmers there. So with the Blue Mountain Coffee Farmers.
Oh, my goodness. Some of the best coffee in the world. Now, the Kona folks will argue with you. They say that their coffee is the best in the world, but
Blue Mountain's pretty good, too.
Blue Mountain.
It's very expensive, as is the Kona.
The last time I checked, I think it was like Kona for whatever the, I'm not sure exactly if it's a 1 pound bag, mm-hmm. the traditional kind of bag. Kona's like $25 to $30.
Yeah.
Blue Mountain's like $35, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's too rich for my blood.
But yeah.
But it's good coffee.
And, yeah,
you know, we work with farmers, so it's really nice to be at that sort of, I drink coffee incessantly during the day, but very rarely do I actually get to interact with the people who make that all happen.
Coffee, and then we'll get on to weather, but this is weather related, because growing coffee, you have to be at the exact altitude, give or take a couple mm-hmm. hundred feet, but it is so critical that you get that perfect altitude and enough moisture, but not too much moisture, because that's going to cause some kind of fungus on the coffee bean and really kills the crop, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's actually why we're there. And we often, in the climatologists and other folks, often spend a lot of time working with farmers because they're so sensitive to climate, both, as you mentioned, both temperature and precipitation. And, you know, you see that across the world. And so thinking about how we can utilize the knowledge that we have about prediction or even just about the past to make people a little bit more resilient to changes is what a lot of, you know, my colleagues, not just within the IRAP project, but a lot of people at the University of Arizona are working working with. And it's not just farmers. I mean, everyone that I know, I mean, I can't think of a sector. It could be public health, disaster risk management, urban planners. Everyone is in some way susceptible to climate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is, it's kind of, well, they say, what is the constant factor in life is change. And climate is, of course, always changing. Mm-hmm. And all of us are impacted wherever you happen to be on this beautiful planet. You're going to be impacted by climate.
That's right. And that insight, everybody has that insight that the climate is dynamic. It's changed in the past. It's going to change in the future. And yet we build our management systems really on the premise that the environment is static.
Mm-hmm. And which I think is so untrue.
Yeah, which is untrue. And I think that's actually been a pretty important movement, let's say, in the last 20 years, at least in terms of climate resilience and climate adaptation, thinking about how to build in flexibility into your management structures and how to plan for uncertainty. And, you know, some places are better equipped than others. But it's a key challenge. And it's not just climate related. There's a whole bunch of other moving parts to this equation that includes, you know, the human dimension of it, which makes it more challenging, but it also makes it extremely interesting to work with.
Now, we had the record-breaking temperatures over the weekend. It was very, very uncomfortable.
Miserable.
In our home. We've held out. I like the swamp coolers generally. Okay, here we go. Ray knows. He's heard me do this argument before about swamps. I like the air conditioning really dries things out. So I like, when the humidity is low, the swamp cooler is great.
Yeah.
But, Zach, when it hits 115, there's no way a swamp cooler is going to knock a temperature down 30 degrees in the house.
If I turned mine on this weekend, too. I actually have a colleague who makes note of the first time he turns his AC on every year. And this year was 2 weeks earlier than last year.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, we had that we had extreme heat. That's not uncommon for this time of year. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, it's quite destructive, quite devastating. And there was a number of, you know, I think there were four people who.
Four, yes. In Arizona. Four, and that reminds me, and I wanted to. Thank
or
you.
Documented.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on my Facebook page to someone that we in the media and all of us locals have to do a better job of getting the word out when we have these kind of critically high temperatures. Mm-hmm. And this goes for the people at the resorts to warn people. This is deadly heat. Because I know that, you know, people come here from all over the world, mm-hmm. and especially a lot of the Germans, they love to come to the Southwest. Right. But when they're, like, inquiring through the concierge at a hotel, and they're given, hey, where can we do some hiking? It really needs to be brought up about the dangers.
Yeah, so I was just looking at statistics this morning from the Arizona Public Health Department. Something on the order of 1,500 hospital visits due to excessive heat or heat-related illnesses each year. On average, since 1990, I believe it is, or it might be 2000, about 120 people die each year, mainly in July. And there is a large fraction of those that result from, not foreigners, mm-hmm. but people outside, non-Arizona residents,
right.
who don't really understand or appreciate how hot it can get. And I would also say that the majority of those statistics, both in terms of hospital visits and mortality, are male related.
Really?
Yeah. So, and part of it is occupation related. So that you can also see a greater fraction of Mexicans that experience excessive heat. And then, of course, you know, I just wonder how many. So we had four documented
four
deaths, but. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's the total number. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people probably walking in the desert mm-hmm. that suffered some casualties.
Yeah, and those are just the folks that passed away. But I'm sure there were all sorts of heat related calls that people were just, you know, were dangerously dangerously ill from heat sickness.
Right, and we didn't break records, I believe, but we came close. Yeah, I think it was it depends on where you were looking, but 215, 216, and I believe the record was in Tucson was 118. We had 115 degrees here on over the weekend.
Yes.
So we didn't break records, but we came pretty darn close.
790-2040, second hottest day, I believe, since records have been kept in Tucson. That's like for over 100 years. When we come back with Zach Guido, we're going to talk about what we can look forward to, and hopefully this will be a productive summer thunderstorm season, and we'll be right back.
Five-Star is going greener. In our efforts to stay environmentally friendly, we are going paperless. When you call us, you give us your name, your phone number, and your address, and your email address. You can now get your invoices by email, your statements, your receipts, and even appointment reminders. So call 5-Star Termite and Pest Control at 886-0045 and help us save the trees.
We know what bugs you.
With a little humor and whimsy, Tohono O'Toole is honoring the environmental significance of bees and National Pollinator Week with their Adopt a Bee campaign. It's estimated that 90% of all flowering plants depend on animal pollinators to help them reproduce, and that includes about 35% of the world's food crops. Join them in raising awareness of the importance of these little creatures and their contribution to our local and international food economy. With your adoption, you'll receive an exclusive invite to their pollinator party on Friday, June the 24th. Meet your bee and enjoy locally distilled Three Wells Tequila and Whiskey Del Bac. Sample the Garden Bistro's inventive food creations using bee pollen and honeycomb. And try the regional honey bar by Dos Manos Apiaries. Appreciate the beauty of the gardens as musicians perform Flight of the Bumblebee. Adopt your bee today and join them on Friday, June the 24th for a pollinator party. For more information, visit tohonochul.org. That's tohonochul.org.
Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Every year, eager travelers journey to Europe to experience the Yuletide season at its very best. With the glittering backdrop of winter white hilltops and extravagantly decorated cities, get swept up in the enchantment that's in the air. Let's not forget the most magical part of all, Europe's famous Christmas markets, renowned for their festive atmosphere, great food and drink, and handcrafted gifts. Experience the magic of the holidays aboard an Amma Waterways river cruise. Call Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Christmas market cruise and save up to 40%. Bon Voyage Travel, 797-1110.
Back at you, Buckmaster with you on the midweek edition. Dr. Zach Guido is with us, UA climate scientist. We're talking weather and we're talking environment, climate. And Zach, there are a few certainties in life. We talked at the beginning of the program that life, we can always count on change. Well, we can always count on change when it comes to the weather. Can we ever count on change with a firm prediction when it comes to our summer thunderstorm season, a.k.a. monsoon season? In a way, saying monsoon season isn't really correct because monsoon is a refers to a wind.
Yeah.
That'd be like saying wind season.
Right. I mean, we know when everybody says the monsoon, we know what we're referring to, but yeah, it's a term that really refers to a shift in the direction of winds, which is actually what happens here in the Southwest. And if you look at the history of the monsoons, most people studied it initially in India, which is where the biggest global expression of the monsoon happens, in large part because the Tibetan Plateau warms up, and then you get all this influx of moist air from the Indian Ocean into India. But the same sort of thing happens here in the Southwest. So most of the time throughout the non-monsoon months, and we should define that. That's the National Weather Service defines it between June 15th and
October 1st, or do they?
Yeah, the end of September.
They used to say September 15th, and I think they just extended it to October 1st.
Yeah, so it's June 15th to September 30th. But our monsoon really doesn't start until, historically, it started about July 1st or July 2nd for Arizona. Of course, it's a progression. The main feature of the monsoon is in northern Mexico, and it progresses north into New Mexico first, and then Arizona, and then northern Arizona. And so for Tucson, the average start date is around July 1st. But, you know, what happens is we get, for the most part, westerly winds throughout the non-monsoon months. And then as the land surface temperatures warm up, and as this high pressure system migrates from Mexico up to slightly north of us, we get southerly flow, and that southerly flow brings in moisture from the Gulf of California. And so the position of the high pressure system is really critical for us. In high pressure systems, the air flows around that clockwise. And so you can imagine that as the center of that high pressure system moves to our north, if you just draw circles around the center of that, you can see how the flow of air would come up from the southern portions of below us, south of us. And as that position is to our south, we get westerly flow. So the timing and the position of that high pressure system is critical for the onset of the monsoon and bringing us moisture.
It's very hard to predict whether we will get 2 inches or 12 inches. I mean, there have been years where we had actually less than 2 inches during the monsoon season. And there have been years where officially at the airport over almost a year's rainfall, which is around 12 inches of rain in a 12-month period for Tucson, where we've gotten like 14 inches. So it's pretty hard to predict, isn't
it? Yeah, that's right. That was your question. It was about what can we predict about the monsoon?
Yes, you can predict it will rain.
It will rain somewhere. That is setting the bar pretty low.
Yes,
yeah. I mean, this is, in terms of climate prediction, this is, I would argue, one of the hardest features to predict, to say something meaningful about. Most of the predictions are a coin flip, because there's a lot of different, it should be noted that we're on the sort of northern fringes of the monsoon. So when you're on, when you're not in the sort of core area, you have a lot of other influences that can tip the precipitation one way or the other.
Like a tropical disturbance off the coast of Mexico,
that's
Baja.
Right. Yeah, and those are really key in the latter half of the monsoon, mm-hmm. because they can send these slugs of moisture up the Gulf of California and stream into our region, and then that sort of starts the whole convective process, and we get precipitation consequently.
Now, last year was the hurricane season in Mexico began at a historic early time, May 15th.
Right.
It was the earliest ever recorded. And that was a very productive season for rain. And it helped Tucson, I think, in our monsoon. But this year, some of the predictions, this will be a much quieter year.
Yeah, that's right. So what can we so the climatologist has a couple things that they look at in their toolkit, and we've talked about this before, Bill, the El Nino Southern Oscillation, and we had an El Nino event for the last 2 years, and El Nino events tend to be associated with increased frequency of tropical storms in the Pacific Ocean, and then that would speak well to us here in Arizona in the Southwest of getting monsoon precipitation in the latter half of the monsoon season. Now, conversely, during La Niña events, which is what we're now transitioning into, the opposite happens. So the tropical storms tend to be suppressed in the Pacific, and so there may be an increased chance. All this is about chances and likelihoods. There's an increased chance that our precipitation in the latter half would be less influenced by these tropical storms, which are important mechanisms for pushing moisture up into the region. Now, I should also say this is why it's so tricky with the climate, because there is also some associations with La Niña events causing an earlier onset of the monsoon, and consequently the early half of the season being a little bit wetter. So, and we've seen right now that we're now within the monsoon circulation. That high pressure system is right where it needs to be. We've got southerly flow. What we're lacking is the necessary moisture in the atmosphere to generate widespread precipitation events.
We had a little rain at our house on Monday. I was shocked, but it was 4 to 5 minutes of a very nice rain, but that was just some kind of a little bit of an anomaly, I'm sure, over my home.
Yeah, I mean, there was some moisture moving in at higher altitudes, uh-huh. and causing some rain, and most of that rain that occurred actually dried up before it hit the ground. It's called virga. So it moisture streams through this really dry atmosphere and just evaporates before it reaches the ground. And that's characteristic of this time of year. What also comes from that are lightning. So you get a lot of these dry lightning strikes. Mm. And so this time is the height of our fire risk season. Late June into July is when the fire risk is the greatest in the Southwest.
So with the La Niña coming up, is there a period then when we are ever not in either an El Niño or a La Niña?
Yeah, so technically we're not really in a La Niña. It's moving in that direction. There's three phases, and they're traditionally defined, they're defined a couple different ways. Many people have probably heard of the sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific in a particular region. That's like the main index used. And so when you have the average of those sea surface temperatures being above 0.5 degrees Celsius, it's an El Nino. When it's below 0.5 degrees Celsius, and this is an anomaly, a difference from average. When it's below 0.5 degrees Celsius, it's a La Niña. And then in between, we call it a neutral state. And we're in a neutral state right now, but the predictions, and this is where we actually have some footing to stand on climatologically. So the predictions are fairly good. They're not perfect, but they're fairly good. And the current thought is that we will transition into a La Niña event later on in the summer.
What's that mean in the winter, La Niña?
Well, so that's a good question. It means for our areas, and I say this, I'm pausing a little bit mm-hmm. because, and I'll say it in a minute, but the La Nina events tend to bring drier than average conditions. Conversely, El Nino events tend to bring wetter than average conditions. Of course, we didn't have that last year.
No, we didn't.
Or during the winter this year. And we had one of our strongest El Ninos on record. By some metrics, it was the strongest. It was definitely within the top three. And
but
so
it failed to live up to its potential.
It did fail. It did fail to live up to its potential. If you look at the statistics, and this is a small sample size because our records only go back to about 1950, and you know, about every third year or so, about roughly 30% of the years have an El Nino event. You know, if you look at the statistics for El Nino events, there is a lot of above average, but there's still some below average. So you have that variability. With La Nina events, the statistics are way more precise around dry conditions. So of the 23 events since mm-hmm. 1950, 20 of them have been below average precipitation for Pima County.
All right. Zach Guido, we'll bring you back in a couple of months and find out how we did for this summer thunderstorm season. But until then, I want to urge, thanks, Zach, for coming in.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you, Bill.
I want to urge all of our listeners, if they really do want to get away from the heat, there are some great options. One of them is just 3 hours east of Tucson to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And Zach, what makes that appealing is the elevation. You're up to about 6,000 feet over in Silver City, so you're going to get some cooler nights.
It's a great place to escape to.
It is. Great place to go over there. SouthwestNewMexico.org has the full listing of the many places, 24 great places to stay in the area, and hiking in America's first official national wilderness, the Gila. Check it out, SouthwestNewMexico.org. Be right back. The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. And with almost 60 flights a day taking off from Tucson International Airport nonstop to San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Oakland, San Francisco, Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, and easy one-stop connections to hundreds of destinations around the world, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Thursday as we talk with TUSD Governing Board member Dr. Mark Stegeman. Also, we're going to talk some hockey with the owner of the Phoenix Coyotes, Anthony LeBlanc. Buckmaster live noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice. It's AM 1030 KVOI. Also, I'd like to direct you to our website, buckmastershow.com, for live streaming podcasts and our show archive. The Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. This portion brought to you by our friends over at Green Things. They just do such a beautiful job. You know, Jan and Jack over there, right off River Road, they started with 4 acres. They've expanded to 13, and it really is a destination in itself. If you do any gardening, I strongly recommend visiting at 3384 East River Road. And I like these workshops they've started doing. These are free weekend workshops. Just drop in, don't need a reservation, 10 a.m. Saturday and Sunday. Let's see, this Saturday they've got dealing with succulents, and then on Sunday, this is very, very good time of year to be talking about heat-resistant annuals. That's coming up Saturday and Sunday. Workshops, Green Things, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. GreenThingsAZ.com. We thank them for their support of our work here in Tucson. Karen Ulick is with us, Tucson City Councilwoman. Councilwoman Ulick, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Bill.
Good to see you.
You too.
While I was away overseas, I heard this news that you are going to be deciding not, you have decided not to stand for re-election representing Tucson's Ward 3. And that would mean that by the time you leave the council, you will have served 12 years.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep. And, you know,
Seems like only yesterday. I remember hosting a couple of your, on TV, some of your very early debates on TV, and I think your first opponent was Republican incumbent Karen Kathleen Dunbar.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, in 2005.
2005.
A lot has changed since then, but yeah.
So what was the, I'm sure this was not a decision that you just woke up one day and said, that's it.
Yeah, no, I did give it a lot of thought. And I think, you know, there is a practical element to it. Campaigning is like a third job, right? You know, the city council is very demanding, and most of us do have other full-time jobs, and as I do. And so I really had to think hard about how I want to spend my time in 2017. But also that, you know, 12 years, I've really had a great opportunity, Bill, to offer what I believe to be good ideas and sound leadership. And I think others in the community can step in and offer their ideas and their brand of leadership, if you will, and that that'll be good for the city. And so it just, on every level, it just seemed like the right decision and the right time.
You know, reflecting back, and I've been around a while, and I can think back to 2005, and that was really kind of a tough period for the city. And I think about all the transition that was starting to go on with Rio Nuevo.
Right. That was one of the key challenges. And, of course, the economy, the downturn, struck Tucson shortly after that in 2007, 2008. We really needed to clean up the city's act with regard to Rio Nuevo. And I, during my first reelection campaign in 2009, that was the year where I made the motion to change the city's management, and that was very controversial and was subjected to immediate challenges, of course, and a recall election and all kinds of things. But I, looking back, am very, very proud of having taken that stand. It was critical to reshape the city's role in Rio Nuevo and let the Rio Nuevo board lead and do its job. So I think everybody could agree now that things have really turned in the right direction.
Our downtown has become a huge tourism attraction.
Yeah.
People are coming, especially the millennials. They love it downtown.
Yeah.
But you think a lot of this has really happened in a 5 to 10 year span.
That's certainly right. And there's no doubt, and I do believe that Mayor Walkup and Nina Trasoff and others deserve credit, Congresswoman Grijalva. The streetcar definitely served as an impetus for private investment, as well as some of those early Rio Nuevo dollars that improved the infrastructure. You can't build if you don't have good water and sewer lines and things that aren't real. Everybody says there's nothing to show for the money spent. Well, actually, it's almost all underground, and it's critical. But having said that, I think that the streetcar gave us the spark, and now it's been a steady burn and a positive one.
Well, I know there were a lot of critics of the streetcar, and I remember the day I interviewed Mayor Walkup on TV when he came in and told all of our listeners and viewers that something has happened that what he believed is going to really turn Tucson around. And that was the news of this so-called Tiger Grant, mm-hmm. which the federal government gave a lot of money and as to kind of get this thing going. And my friend Terry Bracey, who represented Tucson in Washington, was also very instrumental in getting this done. But I think the streetcar was a huge turning point for Tucson.
It really was. That, and you know, we brought in local leadership to the downtown partnership, and I think Michael Keith has done a good job. He knows Tucson.
I'm sorry to see that he's decided to,
step
aside.
There's something about the importance of having somebody local who understands our history and culture. They did the facade program, very small grants to restore historic facades to keep the character downtown. So it is about all of the new investment, but also the shape of it and the character of it that's bringing a lot of additional interest.
Michael was certainly the right guy at the right time. He came from a background where he had fixed up older homes.
Right.
So he had a real feel for
exactly.
our downtown area. And I know he wants to kind of get back to that full-time and do mm-hmm. some other things. But he's done a great job.
Yeah,
Michael
I would agree.
So we have a couple of issues that are coming up in your ward that are really important. One of them is Grant Road.
Yes. That, as is apparent, the corridor project is proceeding east of the Oracle intersection now, and it'll go through the First Avenue intersection. There's a meeting tomorrow that where the land uses adjacent to the corridor between Oracle and First Avenue will be discussed. There are some city properties. They're now city properties because they were acquired. So it's an opportunity for folks in the area and people interested in investing in Tucson can come together and talk about how those properties should be put out to market and how to make sure that what goes in there serves the immediate area as well as the entire region.
So that will be Stone to Park Avenue area would be considered phase two. Then phase three and four would be Alvernon to Swan. It's a very big project.
It is.
I think it's one of the biggest of the RTA projects.
It is. And, you know, I have really advocated that Ward 3 has needed infrastructure development, and this can and will serve as an impetus to spark the kind of investment that we've seen downtown. We've needed this kind of job growth and investment in Ward 3, and so I've really tried to shepherd the corridor forward. Now, having said that, just east of Park, we're also partnering with Banner Health, and we've applied for a federal grant that will allow for a greenway along the edge of the Grant Road corridor so that there will be a sort of an inner city loop trail that residents in the area can enjoy. So it's a balance, and I think we're finding the right path to make that corridor work.
The budget package, there were some that was a difficult time, but I think the city manager, Mr. Ortega, did a good job with that.
He did, and I really want folks to understand the importance of the charter changes that voters approved, one of which is to clarify who's the boss of the department heads. The charter was very confusing. Voters changed the charter just a couple of years ago so that now department directors are accountable directly to the city manager.
That made a huge difference, that clarity, didn't it?
It's enormous. And so he has, Mike Ortega, has seized on that opportunity and worked with the executive leadership team. And that made this budget process work. I would also give tremendous credit to both the police chief, Chris Magnus, and the fire chief, Jim Critchley, who worked with their teams to find ways of reorganizing their departments to keep people safe, but to get more resources out on the streets and in the community. And I know that that's being widely embraced by Tucsonans.
All right, Karen Ulick will stick around for another segment with us, 790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation. We're going to take a break right here. We ask that you give your support. Give a listen to the people who believe in the work we do here in Tucson. Give them your support. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm a passionate traveler visiting more than 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 5 airlines flying to 18 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across Pima County. More than 730 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. Thanks to our partners in the public for collaboration, participation, and support of the RTA plan. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to our communities, the RTA truly is making a difference. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Tucson City Councilwoman Karen Ulick is with us, representing Ward 3. Councilwoman, you're headed for Washington tomorrow?
I am. I received an invitation about a month ago to join with congressional leaders and some White House officials on an LGBT roundtable discussion. And obviously, the urgency around that is heightened since the massacre in Orlando. And while I'm there, I'm just flying in the morning and flying back at night. But I'm meeting with some Congressman Grijalva and Congresswoman Kirkpatrick and also HUD officials, because we're really trying to persuade HUD to invest in the Oracle Corridor. And we have a Choice Neighborhoods proposal that I want to make sure they're aware of. And also the Grant Road proposal that I mentioned for the Health Trail and Historic Park.
Do you feel there's kind of a new economic energy going on, not only with downtown, but Caterpillar was huge, certainly. Home Goods, the Comcast remodel was beautiful. And I think this news of a major new shopping center for Tucson on the west side of I-19 is huge.
Yeah, I think, and much of that has been sparked by our decision to put land on the market in strategic locations and to try and harness what's happening in the economy. It's definitely on an uptick. And in Ward 3, we're seeing it. The Wildcat House was redeveloped, and in that area, there will be additional developments. We have some great infill housing projects that are going to be with a number of different companies, and so we're definitely, and Comcast is located in Ward 3, the auto mall annexation, lots and lots and lots of signals that things are moving in the right direction.
Governor Ducey signed HB 2579, which I know officials in Tempe and Tucson were not real happy about it, because it prohibits cities and towns from enacting an earned sick day policy for workers in their community. Not only not happy about that, but in a way handcuffing the authority of cities.
Well, and we don't believe the state can do that. The cities that have charters or voter-adopted constitutions are empowered in the state constitution and otherwise to have local control. And on the earned sick leave issue, the voters, when the minimum wage was raised by the voters some time ago, in that initiative, it made it very clear that cities shall be empowered to enact those kinds of improvements to workers' wages and benefits. Now, certainly what we want is to be able to have that conversation here in Tucson and to be afforded the opportunity to enact, the will of people here. And it would certainly, on any issue that we tackle, there would be robust debate and conversation. But for the state to step in is, we think, going to just land everybody in court once more. We obviously will do what we think is best.
Tucson is one of 19 chartered cities
yeah.
that, under the Arizona Constitution, were given the right to legislate free of state interference and prohibit the legislature from dictating matters of local control.
Yeah.
So just looking at this on the surface, a lawsuit seems like would have some pretty good standing.
Yeah. And what I wish is that we could work with the state. And if there are matters...
And avoid the whole legal mess.
Well, absolutely. And discuss whether things could be enacted at the state level in cooperation with the League of Towns and Cities that address the needs and interests of the cities within Arizona. So the League of Cities could be a great partner. None of us wants to see a patchwork of ordinances that changes, from city to city. But part of that does arise when so many people in the state believe that the state is not responding to critical issues of interest. And so one option, I think, would be for the governor to contact the mayors and the councils and say, hey, what are these issues? Let's avoid a patchwork and let's talk about what kind of legislation we could enact in concert with the cities to handle pressing needs.
And I understand there is going to be a signature gathering process or something called the Healthy Families Coalition.
Yeah, I think, again, people simply want to make sure that there's a floor set that people won't fall through if they're working. And hardworking people want to be able to take care of their families and just have the basics covered. And right now, far too many families in Tucson, we know, are struggling with that.
One issue that won't go away, and it will come up again when our weather improves, a lot of the homeless people hopefully have moved on and away from this excessive heat that
yeah.
we've been having, but that issue is not going to go away.
It's jeopardizing people's lives
it really
right now.
Is.
And I really want to acknowledge the Pima County Health Department. Dr. Garcia and Michelle Manos have been very proactive and doing everything they can. I work with Simpatico and work on housing and homelessness. There's a very proactive effort within Simpatico and a whole lot of partners. And I do also want to applaud Mayor Rothschild and Councilmember Fimbres, my colleague. They both have spent enormous effort and leadership to do more to address homelessness in the city of Tucson.
One thing all of us who live here need to do more, and I brought this up at the beginning of the show, I'm very distressed about out-of-towners who come and then die in our desert during
yeah.
this excessive heat like we had last weekend. And I think those of us in the media, those of us in the tourism industry, we've got to get some kind of a PR campaign going, I think, to warn people about
yeah,
the heat.
That it is
a
deadly.
A big time
right.
effort needs to be put forth because
absolutely.
One death in the desert is one death too many.
That's right.
And I think of this young, fairly young man, 30-something from Germany, 33? Yeah, 33-year-old. His parents flew over here to Tucson from mm-hmm. Germany, had to identify the body. Think about that
horrible
situation there. And it's just, I've been very upset about these deaths in the desert. And I think the hotel folks need, you know, people come up and they say, where can we go hiking? There needs to be something, warnings on certain days.
Absolutely.
Don't go out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And let's not forget that there are people who have no option but to hike, and they're dying on the streets. Homeless folks are at risk. And I'm proud of the community for mobilizing, but we can always use more help in providing water and cooling spaces and assistance. And there's a whole coalition working, particularly with Councilmember Fimbres, Simpatico, and other partners to make that happen.
All right. Karen Ulick, thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Karen Ulick with us on The Buckmaster Show. Coming up this afternoon, we do 5 hours daily of local talk here. Mike Shaw and Ray Allen, they'll be back with you at 4 o'clock this afternoon for Mike Shaw's show. Always a good one. And then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson 6 to 8, the Daily Double with Christy Simone from 8 to 9, and then me, Bill Buckmaster, with you tomorrow. And tomorrow's show, we're going to talk education. Dr. Mark Stegeman will be with us for the first half hour. Then we're going to talk some hockey, and we didn't get a chance to get into that with you, Councilwoman Ulick. We're going to speak with the Coyotes general manager, talking about how important this new franchise here Tucson, Arizona, the Roadrunners, is going to be, not only to Tucson, but really to the Phoenix Coyotes. This is going to be their main pipeline to the big league, so to speak.
That's
so
right.
It's a big deal.
It is.
All right. Thank you very much, Councilwoman Ulick. We'll be with you tomorrow at 12:04. Have a great afternoon.